Welcome to this podcast of sermons from University Christian Church, Disciples of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. UCC is a community of faith where all are welcome, where we worship in a spirit of togetherness, where we embrace curiosity, community, and compassion. We don't claim to have all the answers, nor do we expect you to check your brain at the door, but rather we gather together to find the courage to engage the scriptures and to ask the big questions about who we are as people of faith, and who God is calling us to be. At UCC, we seek the sacred, commit to love, and empower to serve. And in so doing, we work together to transform the world through Christ's courageous love. My name is Reverend Dr. Russ Peterman, and I'm the senior minister here at UCC, and so most of these sermons are from me. In the season of Lent, a time of anticipation, a time of preparation as we prepare both individually and collectively for resurrection, not only in our own lives, but in the world as well. And for thousands of years, people have been using this season of Lent as a time of preparation, a time of deep introspection and growth. It's a time when we ask difficult questions. We talk about things like repentance, a word that literally means to change course. As we examine the path that we are on and ask ourselves, what is the next right thing for me? Our theme, as many of you know, during the season of Lent is listen. We're trying to clear away some of the noise and some of the clutter, some of the distractions in order to be able to hear that still small voice. That voice that comes to us oftentimes in the most surprising of ways, oftentimes when we're not paying attention, but too often gets drowned out in the midst of the busyness and the noise of our lives. A couple of weeks ago, I said that I think that learning how to listen is one of the most difficult things that we do. It's true in our relationship with our parents, with our children, with our coworkers, and certainly it is true with God. But at some point in all of these relationships, we discover that not only is it difficult, but it is perhaps the most important element of what it means to be church and what it means to be people of faith. The story that we're going to be looking at this morning is from Mark chapter 9. It's a story that has always intrigued me. To set up the story, it takes place just after the Transfiguration. Jesus has set his face towards Jerusalem, which means he knows what is ahead of him. The difficulty, the struggles, the pain that is in front of him. And in the midst of the story, what we'll hear is that some of the disciples are arguing amongst themselves. And they bring this man who had come with his son. And the father explains that this evil spirit has seized his son, and then he begins to explain that for him, his life had become a living hell. That when this spirit shows up, it throws him to the ground, and he foams at the mouth, and he grinds his teeth, he becomes stiff as a board. He says, I told your disciples, but they couldn't do anything. I'm hoping, Jesus, though, that you can. Thankfully, that's just where the story starts. But as you'll hear, that's not where the story ends.
Hear these words now from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 9, verses 14 through 29. When they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them and some of the scribes arguing with them. When the crowd saw him, they were immediately overcome with awe, and they ran forward to greet him. He asked them, "What are you arguing about with them?" Someone from the crowd answered him, "Teacher, I brought my son. He has a spirit that makes him unable to speak, and whenever it seizes him, it dashes him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. And I asked your disciples to cast it out, but they could not do so." He answered them, "You faithless generation, how much longer must I be among you? How much longer must I put up with you? Bring him to me." And they brought the boy to him. When the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell to the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the father, "How long has this been happening to him?" And he said, "From childhood, It has often cast him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you are able to do anything, have pity on us and help us." Jesus said to him, "If you are able, all things can be done for the one who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out, "I believe, help my unbelief." When Jesus saw that a crowd had come running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "You spirit that keeps this boy from speaking."
If you've ever been a parent, if you are a parent, you know that when your child is sick, there's nothing worse in the world. There's an old saying that when our children are not well, we are not well, and we know that to be true. And here's this boy foaming at the mouth. His life is a living hell. And there's nothing you can do about it. You can hear, can't you? The anguish and the pain, the fear, the despair, the desperation. You can hear it in his voice. And you can empathize with him as well. Is there anything worse as a parent than watching your child, no matter what age they are, suffer or be in pain? Is there anything worse? I think that's how a lot of us are feeling these days, not just about our own children, but about the whole world. There is so much pain, there is so much suffering going on around us. And you can hear, if you place your ear to the ground, you can hear the despair and the desperation. You can hear the fear in the collective voice of the world. These are scary times. And a lot of us are feeling deeply afraid. Here's what I want to say about that. First, it's okay if you are frightened. It's okay if you are afraid. It's okay. In fact, it's completely natural in the midst of a global pandemic to be afraid. The world doesn't need you in this moment to be some sort of hero. It needs you to stay home. Elizabeth Gilbert says, "You don't need to be, you don't pretend to be some perfected spiritual master who is able to glide through the most violent and shattering upheavals of life without so much as flinching. That's not what the world needs from you." I think it's okay for us to admit when we're afraid, to be what you are, authentically. If that's afraid, if it's anxious, if it's nervous, if it's unsettled, it makes sense that you would be afraid in this moment. There is a tremendous amount of uncertainty in the world around us. Most of us have never seen anything like this in our lifetime. In 1947, W.H. Auden wrote a book, Pulitzer Prize-winning book, called The Age of Anxiety. And in the post-war 40s and 50s, if that was the age of anxiety, this must be the age of high anxiety. Some of us are afraid of the virus, afraid that we might get sick. Others are afraid that they might not be able to pay their rent. Some of us are afraid that our retirement nest egg is dwindling away as the stock market continues to plunge. All of that is enough to make anyone afraid. But yet, I would remind you of one of the most often repeated commandments in the Bible. In fact, it appears over 365 days, as one scholar says, one for every day of the year. The commandment is simply, do not be afraid. Fear not, the scriptures remind us over and over and over again. But fear's a complex emotion, isn't it? On the one hand, it's a good thing. In fact, it's a system that God designed into us. It's a system in our bodies, in our brains, that prepares us to either flee or fight or freeze in the face of danger. We have this capacity to sense danger and to do something about it. But we also have the capacity in our brain to take in all of the information around us and to imagine the worst possible thing that could happen. And that imagination is to help us prepare for the worst. by imagining the worst thing that might happen, things that might not ever happen. In fact, most often, things that never happen. But yet, it's a way that we prepare, that we protect ourselves. And that is good. This is a mechanism for fear that protects us. But that mechanism for fear, if we only give in to that, if we only live into that fear, that oftentimes that can leave us terrified. It can leave us paralyzed. Fear is complex. It has the power to not only save us, but also to paralyze us. And so the question I think a lot of us are struggling with is, how do we not be paralyzed? How do we not be imprisoned by our fear, not be so afraid that we hoard all of the toilet paper at Costco, but yet we do take this virus seriously? To allow that fear to mobilize us to do what we can to minimize the effects of this virus, the impact of this pandemic, to slow the progression of this disease down a little bit. Just a quick note about the toilet paper thing. I saw someone say that if you need 144 rolls of toilet paper to survive a 14-day quarantine, you probably should have seen your doctor long before this virus hit. Now, the first thing that I was talking about, this, imagine the worst possible thing. We call this catastrophizing. I love that term, catastrophizing. So how do we keep from catastrophizing? To take seriously the threat, but then also to turn to our faith, to lean into our faith, to be in the midst of this, a non-anxious presence in this world, to be people who have peace and love and hope in the midst of the storms that life throws at us, to not be fueled by our fear, to be motivated to do what we can to protect ourselves and to minimize the risk, but also to not be fueled by our fear to the extent that it paralyzes us, it imprisons us. In the story that we heard just a minute ago, Jesus' first reaction when presented with this crisis was to ask a question. How long has this been going on? Which is a question that many of us are asking ourselves. How long is this going to go on? How long has this been going on, Jesus asked. And I hear that, and my immediate reaction is a little bit surprised. I'm a little bit perplexed. Jesus, this is no time for questions. You can see, Jesus, this boy needs help now. Why not heal first, and let's ask questions later? But I wonder if the answer to that question is in the question itself. How long has he been like this? This is a question of compassion, of care, of history. It's the way that Jesus allows himself to enter into the pain. Notice that Jesus' first impulse is not to try and fix or heal the pain, but instead to enter into it. And I think if we pay attention to that, we see a glimpse of how God moves, what God is like. Do you remember in the Exodus story where God gives instructions to the Israelites through Moses that they should build a tabernacle? Yahweh says to the people through Moses, have them make for me a sanctuary, a tent, and I will dwell with them there. This worship space that they can take with them as they wander, that they can go wherever they are. Meaning, you don't have to be in the sanctuary. You can be in your living room, at your desk. And God is there. You see, the Israelites had been having problems. They've been grumbling. They've been attacked. And in the midst of it all, God says, I will join them there. In the midst of the suffering, God's desire is not to take them out of their pain, not out of their suffering, out of their problems, but instead to enter into it. You see, God's instinct, God's impulse is to join us in the midst of our crisis, in the midst of our pain, in the midst of our suffering. Robert Capon tells a story. I remember it from long ago, a story of a man stuck in a snowbank. And he finds himself there. He's stuck. He can't get out of the snowbank. And Capon says that the way that God responds in that moment, God doesn't put more fuel in the tank. God doesn't change the weather. God doesn't magically allow more food to appear in that moment. God simply opens the door and says, "Scoot over. You and I are going to ride this out together." This man says to Jesus, this father, "If you can do anything, Jesus, if you can do anything, take pity on us." Now that word pity in Greek is the word splunknitsamoi, which is one of my favorite words to say. Splunknitsamoi. It's from the noun splunknon, which means, well, it means bowels. It means intestines. He's asking Jesus to enter into his pain in a way that Jesus feels it in his guts, in a way that is gut-wrenching for Jesus. He's saying, "I'm not asking so much to fix the pain. I want you to feel it. I need you to feel it. I need you to enter into it with me." There is this instinct, though, don't we, that we always have to try. We want to rush in. We want to fix it. We want to make it better. How many of you have ever had this experience? You come home at the end of a long day at work, and your spouse, your partner tells you, you know, it's been a horrible day. And they go on and they start to tell you about something, the situation that happened at work, maybe with the kids. And you immediately go into fix it mode and you say, "Well, have you thought about doing this? Have you thought about doing that? How did you respond in that moment?" And they just look at you and say, "I don't need you to fix it. I just need to be heard." Parker Palmer tells a time that he was going through a time of deep depression in his life. And he had all kinds of friends, people that loved him deeply, and they would come and they would give him advice on how to overcome his depression. He said those people were so annoying. And they ended up doing more damage in the end than good. But yet he also writes of a friend named Bill who came to him every afternoon, and they simply rubbed his feet. He didn't give advice. He didn't try to cheer him up. He just rubbed his feet. Madeleine L'Engle, one of the great authors, following the death of her husband, was asked, "What was the most help in the midst of that grief, in that time of suffering? What was the most help?" And she said, "You know, it was the people who said little, but just came and sat with me and held me in that moment, allowed their tears to mingle with my tears. They were the ones that were the most help in that time." Do you remember the story of Job in the Hebrew Scriptures? Job is, if ever hell has broken loose in somebody's life, it's in Job. And his trusted friends, wanting to fix and to heal, they come rushing in and they say things that aren't helpful at all. And finally, Job's had enough, and he says to his friends, "You smear me with lies. You are worthless physicians. If only you would be altogether silent, for you that would be wisdom." We so desperately want to use our words, to feel as if our words are the only thing that we have. But I would argue that maybe sometimes our greatest gift is not our words, but simply our presence. We try and say things to be helpful, but in the end, it's not. And so what if in these moments when we want to rush in with our words, what if we simply offered our presence? What if we were willing to simply listen to what is needed in that moment? Did you hear what Jesus said at the end? These things can only be fixed with prayer. So we're talking about prayer here. So maybe prayer has more to do with listening than the words that we say. Friends, these are uncertain times, to be sure. They are unprecedented, at least in our lifetimes. And I think part of what makes it so unsettling is that we don't know what to do. We don't know what people need in this moment. I think that's true for us as individuals. I know it's true for us as a staff, as a church. We're all sort of asking ourselves, how do we as a church, a place of hope and healing, of connection, what do we have to offer in this time when we can't come together in the ways that we always have? How do we, as people of faith, how do we care for our neighbors when we have to distance ourselves from them? I've asked our staff, our clergy team, our volunteers to all reach out and to touch base with everybody in the church this week. And just to check in with every household and just let them know that we are here for you, that the work of the church continues. And it turns out that this took a lot longer than we thought it was going to, in part because there's a lot of families, there's a lot of households in this church. But I think more than that is that these were not quick calls. That you all talked a lot. You needed to be heard. You needed someone to listen. And I was reminded this week of one of the most enduring and powerful gifts that we have is simply to listen. Because by listening, we embody the love of the sacred, the love of the wider community, the love of life itself, and compassionate listening is exactly what people need in this moment when they are faced with this overwhelming, this uncontrollable circumstances of a crisis. That word crisis, when I was working on my doctorate, I came across something that I found fascinating. And that is that in the Chinese language, that the symbol for crisis is actually composed of two different words. Wei, which means danger, but also Ji, which stands for opportunity. In the midst of a crisis, there is danger, yes, but also there is opportunity. A friend reminded me this last week, the movie Apollo 13, there was that crisis when the spaceship was up in the circling the atmosphere and an oxygen tank explodes. And all of NASA was scrambling to try and make things work to keep these men alive, to bring them home. And one of the people in the control room was overheard saying, "This is going to be the worst disaster that NASA has ever experienced." And in that moment, George Krantz, who was the flight director of that mission, said, "Sir, with all due respect, this is going to be our finest moment." And sure enough, it turned out to be NASA's finest hour as they dealt with that crisis. You see, church, we have an opportunity right now, both individually and collectively, for this dangerous crisis to become an opportunity for this to be our finest hour. We are the gathering people of God, and for a number of weeks, we're gathering in new ways. We are connecting. We are being church in new ways. And what I've seen in this last week is that in this crisis, what has been spurred is creativity and connection in a way that is faithful and inspiring. You see, we can, as people of faith and not fear, respond to the anxiety of this hour, to allow this to be our finest hour. How we care for one another, how we respond to one another, how we have hope and courage and compassion to connect with one another in the midst of everything that's going on. That the church would boldly reflect the courageous love that God has for each and every one of us. You see, the God that we worship is bigger than our fears. And God is bigger than this virus, but yet is as near to us as our next breath, comes to us and speaks to us in the sound of sheer silence, and says to us, "Scoot over. You and I, we're in this together. We will get through this together." So thanks for listening. I do hope and pray that you found this sermon to be engaging and thoughtful and inspiring and maybe even a little challenging. I also hope that if you get the chance to join us on Sunday mornings in our sanctuary, you will. I think you'll find the welcome warm and inviting, the music inspiring, and there will always be a place at the table for you, regardless of who you are, or where you come from, or where you are on your spiritual journey. Just know that you're welcome here. And if you'd like to support the production of this podcast and the ongoing mission and ministry of UCC, or to simply find out more about this community of faith, we invite you to go to universitychristian.org. Grace and peace to you.